I'm Graham Sibley.
I'm Jan Bilton.
I'm Terry DeFellin.
And this is The Sound of Football. Welcome back to The Sound of Football. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Terry DeFellin and Jan Bilton, and this is a special midsummer edition of The Sound of Football. We've come in our shorts. Well, Jan's come in his shorts.
Jan's literally come in his shorts. Yeah. We have metaphorically come in our shorts.
Is that the side of my legs doing that?
Actually, I didn't realise. It was for a couple of seconds. I didn't realise you were wearing shorts because you've obviously like served time in the Middle East, serving with our boys. You come camouflaged.
And straight out of Desert Storm.
I know. So like your like body is like floating above like a couple of white struts.
So, it's all rather bizarre.
But we've not actually been on holiday yet, hasn't it? This is how early it is. I mean, like, we're all going to go away in August and September. So we thought we'd get one in now. You know, while we're on our Singapore tour, like everyone else is at the moment.
So money making short tour to the Far East.
Yeah, we really should get in on that, shouldn't we?
If we got in on that. We should definitely be the official podcast of some money-making Asian tour. We could go out there and just
hang out.
Yeah.
And we could pretend, whether they like it or not.
We could be like the players, just pretend to be excited about it for the sponsors. Every time the sponsors come by and say, yes, fantastic, the Guangzhou Evergrande versus Liverpool, can't wait! You know, and then they're going to go, oh God, this is death.
But of course, that would mean we'd have to spend 25 minutes out of the half hour talking about gambling.
Yes, that's true.
Yes.
But I think that we can do that.
Yeah, we probably could.
I think we might surprise ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. Instead of saying, I wouldn't be surprised if, we would have to say, put your house on it.
You do, yes. Yeah. Don't hesitate.
Yeah.
Put your house on it.
Yes.
And don't worry about all that irresponsible gambling malarkey.
No.
This is the Far East. None of it matters out here.
Put your house on it and you get a free bet for £30.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Which, unfortunately, you can't exchange for food stamps.
Especially if you lose. Football hasn't stopped, though, has it? It's been dominating the back pages. You wouldn't believe there's an Ashes series going on at the moment. Well, there is. You have to go in a few pages once you get past Raheem Sterling. Mm-hmm. But, of course, like that's the story of the moment, isn't it?
Yeah. He's gone blue.
He's turned blue. Yeah.
He has turned blue.
Yeah.
And green.
Yeah, he's rolling around in the green.
He's rolling around in the green.
All right, and green. Yeah, not green, not because he's had too many stimulants or anything like that.
Oh well, that's another story.
I don't know if that's one of the many problems you get if you take too much hippie crack.
Yeah, it turns you green.
Yeah, I think that's more gamma radiation.
I always mix those two ones.
Sterling smash.
But he went for a few quid, though, didn't he?
I don't know. I mean, I've been like following transfer busting deals for a few years now. I'm not really sure what a lot of money is anymore.
In terms of British transfers, it's the biggest one, I think, isn't it?
It must be.
Yes, yeah. but how much did Torres? Torres is the biggest one still, isn't it?
Was 50 million quid.
So that's the biggest interclub deal, I suppose, isn't it, really?
Mm. Yeah.
But now, yes.
But obviously, he's a young'un, he's English, and he's a lot of money to spend on a young Englishman.
Mm. Yes. Yeah. Is it too much, do you think?
Well, my concern is, and we've said this before on the pod, that he's gonna go there and not get a regular game. You know, he'll get a regular place on the bench.
$9 million?
Well, you know, they've got a lot of money there. It doesn't really matter, does it? They bring in. I mean, they had Nzeko, who didn't cost them that much, to be fair, but a cracking player who didn't really get a look in. You know, he'd get into many a side in the world, many a quality side in the world, and you know, Man City didn't really give him a go.
Back then, they were buying players for fun, though, weren't they? So when they bought him, they did have an embarrassment of riches up front.
The impression I got with the Dzeko transfer was that he was perhaps going to be that they were playing a big squad and he wouldn't necessarily play every game.
Mm.
I do think that for £49 million and for a high profile transfer, it is that I'd be very surprised if City didn't start him and persist with him. And it would have to take him really disappointing and dropping off in form, never really living up to the heights and expectations before he was dropped. I doubt very much that they would necessarily rotate him. But you could be right, Jan, because, you know, they have got a big squad and big ambitions, and they've got a lot of games to play. So it may well be that they will be. But I would imagine that he'll certainly start for Manchester City in the Premier League, certainly for the first 6-7 games of the season. And maybe if he's rubbish, they might drop him. But I would imagine that they'll leave it up to Pellegrini to decide what to do with him.
Well, you'd hope he had an input in the signing.
You'd like to think so, yeah. I think that if he said, this guy's rubbish, you shouldn't sign him, then they would listen. I find it hard to believe that anybody, any coach would say something like that about Raheem Sterling. He's a very good player.
He is.
He may be overrated. But maybe overrated, maybe not. But I mean, but many people think that he is. But that doesn't take away from the fact that he is actually a very good player. So, you know, City have signed a good player.
Okay, so if I say to you, Jerome, with your knowledge of German football, who's better, Sterling or Firmino?
Well, at this moment, I would certainly say Firmino is a better player.
And
complete player, more experienced.
Yeah, who Liverpool have bought for less than half the money they've...
Liverpool have done extremely well out of the deal because they've sold a player whom is yet to fully blossom, and they've signed a player who is approaching the peak of his powers in Roberto Firmino.
Yeah.
So I would say that they've done extremely well. And Liverpool, you know, they need really to get results now. They need to get results this season. Mm. They need a squad that can take them back into the Champions League, I should say, not the Championship. that would be unthinkable, wouldn't it? But back into the Champions League, and I think that Firmino is an outstanding signing. I mean, Liverpool have no excuses if they can't get that guy playing, because he really is at his peak right now. Mm-hmm. Fantastic player. I mean, he makes goals, he scores goals. On form, Roberto Firmino will do something meaningful that will result in a goal. He'll either score a goal or create an assist every game. Mm. And you can that's worth an awful lot of money. And I think Liverpool have done extremely well to get him, and they can offset a considerable amount of that by the fact that they've sold Sterling as well. So for what Liverpool are trying to achieve this season, I think that it's decent. I mean, a bit further on down the line, they might look at it and think, well, Sterling's a young talent that we would have liked to have brought through and blossom at our club. And that is disappointing, particularly from a fan's perspective, because you do like to see players come through and blossom in your own club. But I think that on a more short-term view, Liverpool, have done a very good job in getting a great deal of money for a player who perhaps has yet to prove himself in some people's eyes.
Mm, he has, but he did cause them a lot of problems towards the end of last season with the whole hippie crack thing, and more recently he didn't bother turning up for training. Apparently that wasn't sanctioned, so it could be that they would have wanted to hang on to him. There's no doubt that the guy's got some real talent, but whether he is someone they want to hang on to because of maybe his personality is another thing.
Yeah.
And as well as that, you're right, they've obviously brought in somebody who's pretty good for less money, and there's rumours that they're chasing Benteke as well, who would certainly give them a bit more firepower. And if they've made a bit of a profit on the deal, it's going to make a big dent in that transfer as well, isn't it?
How old is Sterling? 20? 19?
Somewhere around there.
I'm just thinking about players like Marco Reus at that age.
Yeah.
Mario Götze at that age.
Yeah.
For me, they were better players than Sterling is now.
Mm.
I would... that's what gives me pause. I don't hold that he is quite up there among the true greats of the sort of young generation of players. I think there have been recently better players than he. That is not to say that he won't go on to become a world-class star, not at all. And he's certainly now at a football club where he's got the opportunity to maximise his potential. But that element of the transfer surprised me a bit. But, you know, I mean, I only watched Raheem Sterling on the television, so that we all do. Mm. I mean, City will have had him scouted and watched and analysed.
Mm.
And if they think that that's worth the price, then I would defer to their judgment rather than my own. But it occurs to me that I've seen better players than he yeah. at that age go for considerably less money.
Well, I mean, to be fair, you know, it feels to me that you know that deal was engineered with the you know the press's participation, you know, with all the stuff that was going on in the press towards the end of last season with him. And you know the near £50 million price tag is, I think, just the outcome of what is a good bit of media manipulation by his agent, who's got him a good fee. And maybe, you know, it you could argue it's not really the player's fault how much the market is demanding for his services. You know, his agent managed to get a decent fee, and I think that QPR got a good kickback from that as well.
This also perhaps skews the price as well, because Liverpool would have been mindful of that as well. So that would have added an extra bit of money onto it. Sterling's agent, is a controversial character, to say the least. Some might say more than that. Kind of sticks in the craw that he's made a bit of a killing out of it, doesn't he?
Well, yeah, I did read something about his agent, because his agent is actually having quite an acrimonious split from his old company, which is a very big sports management company.
Right.
And they're accusing him of like poaching some of their best players, because he's off on his own now. But it's not only current players. There is actually people in the football media are under this are in this stable.
Oh, really?
There's multi layers of. That's what Jan is
saying about perhaps media. Yeah. Sort of getting involved in that in order to perhaps sort of try and affect the market. Really.
Yeah.
That's shit, really, isn't it?
Well, it is, but it's the world with. We live in. I mean, there was. I think in the world of cricket, that it's happened quite a lot, where you've got former players who come on to Sky and will big up players and say, "Oh well, I don't know why this guy isn't in the England team," and then you suddenly realise that they're both with the same managing agency.
It's showbiz, isn't it?
It is exactly that's it.
I mean, it's not. This is not unusual in showbiz.
No,
and I guess. Yeah, football is to very large degree.
You're in the entertainment industry, and this is why players have agents now, because it is part of the show. And really, the whole thing about the whole transfer sideshow is a sideshow. It's entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, it's there to sell newspapers, and it does really effectively. It's like gets you clicks and gets people watching Sky Sports News.
Mm.
You know, that's why we have the transfer deadline day is you know, the Sky Sports News like Christmas, isn't it? Really?
Mm. Yeah, it shouldn't really be anything, but it should.
It
shouldn't.
Yeah.
But they've got this dead time.
Yeah.
The end of January.
Yeah.
And they can sell advertising time.
Yeah.
On Sky Sports for Christmas Day money. It's crazy, isn't it?
It is.
But, you know, you're right. The media is complicit in that. It's all part of the same merry-go-round. The soap opera narrative suits everyone, and everyone makes some money out of it.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about it, I suppose, aren't we?
Damn straight we are. Yeah. Easy content. That's easy what we like. Yeah. Yeah. We love a bit of easy content, especially in these long summer months. Yeah, otherwise we'd have to still talk about pre-season friendlies.
We'd have to talk about football. Yeah. Imagine that.
Oh, cool. Yeah. No, we did enough of that last time, though, didn't we?
We were watching the
Women's World Cup.
I know.
And we watched it all the way to the end.
We did.
That was pretty special, wasn't it?
That was special.
Yeah.
And I thought, actually, our England optimism was... actually, completely not unfounded or unrealistic.
I was dragged right back to 1990. Mm. I really was. It was like, you know, when you know we went to a World Cup and with no expectations whatsoever, watched us somehow get to a semi final.
I mean, it's fantastic, and I mean England were really good. I mean, they were not as good as some, but not very many others. I mean, they weren't very good as good as keeping the ball as other players were, but other teams were. But the tactical discipline, you know, I mean, they really set themselves up really, really well. I think the coach has got a lot of credit for that as well, obviously, as you'd expect. But the players, just the togetherness, extraordinary. It's very rare to see an England side play with such togetherness and just an inherent understanding of what the other players are doing around them.
Mm.
I mean, it was really completely unlike watching the men's team.
Yeah.
Although in many ways it is like watching the men's team, because I mean, it was a very English way of playing football. It was very sort of like more direct,
yeah,
less time on the ball.
A load of 2-1 wins.
lots of 2-1 wins, yeah. And it just and so in many ways they extolled the great English virtues of football. And they did it extremely well. And were within a thrice of the final.
Yes. Mm. Yes, yeah. Yeah, we would have been absolutely...
Well, they would have been hammered by the Americans, but...
they were scary, just, scary
were,
good.
Because they were just much better than everyone.
Yeah, but I must admit, I love football, but you know, I never watch a third-place playoff. But I did in this one.
I watched that.
Yeah.
That was a game. That was quality, that game.
That was.
That was brilliant, cool. And it was great, because it is good to beat Germany and any circumstances, yeah, you know, football-related, obviously.
Yeah.
Not broadening out the conversation at all, I think what was also meaningful about it was the reaction of the players afterwards when they won. I mean, there was a big thing for them. In fact, the reaction of both sets of players, because this wasn't a kind of like the men's third place playoff when they go, oh no, we've lost,
yeah,
or oh great, we've won. Yeah. You know, there was genuine. Bitterness of defeat on behalf of the Germans, and the English just absolutely,
yeah,
caught the hoop at having won.
Personally, Jan, I was quite heartened actually, because in the days afterwards, you know, from a sound of football perspective, the way that everybody started coming out a few days after saying, "Oh, it's so unfair that we haven't got a British team going to the Olympics now." And of course, you know, loyal listeners will know this is exactly what we were telling people just a few short months ago. But,
yeah, 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 exactly. Yeah,
sound of football leads.
Yeah, others follow. So,
I wonder if that will change. I suspect not. I imagine they'll probably go quiet now. But but I do think that it behooves some media organs to try and keep that. Certainly, the closer we get to the Rio Olympics,
yeah,
is that a question sort of like we'll have to be. But I suspect by that point it'll be too late.
Yeah.
Like, it probably is too late.
Oh, it's too late now. Mm-hmm. It's too late now. It's not going to happen. And now.
Well, I think if there was a big wave of political will, we want this to happen, and I reckon that the powers that be might go, okay, we have to accommodate this.
Yeah.
It did go right to the wire last time as well, though, didn't it? You know, there was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing.
There was some to-ing and fro-ing, right. But I have a feeling I
think the wire's already gone.
I suspect it probably has. Yeah. Because they'll be organising that tournament by now, won't they?
They've got to have
some. Everyone will know who's going and what's going, and so. They've got
to have playoffs now,
right?
For the last UEFA spot, because obviously we can't take it, so it's going to be between I think between four teams that went out in the round of 16. So it's between them. So there's got to be some kind of playoff situation going on.
Mm. Okay. Well, that remains a great shame, I think.
Yes.
And a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
Mm. A missed opportunity.
Mm. But I suppose what we have to face now, though, for women's football is the fact that it's going to slowly turn into the men's game.
Do you think so?
Well, as soon as they came back, they were just off the off the plane, and one of the players who had been a lifelong player of Reading was snapped up by Chelsea.
Right.
So, you know, this is exactly what's happening now. And I think this is one thing that helped me watch the World Cup is because although I'm an Arsenal fan, I didn't really feel, you know, any more allegiance to the Arsenal players in the side, or any sort of animosity towards the ones who were playing for Chelsea.
No.
As I would probably do, albeit subconsciously.
Yeah.
You know, but when you watch it, I mean, you know what it's like. If you see a Newcastle player playing for England.
Yeah. Well, watching Alan Shearer lead the attack for all those years was just horrific. And when he scored that goal against Germany when we, I forget the competition.
Euro 2000?
Was it Euro 2000?
Yeah.
Yeah. He scored the goal and we beat Germany. That was bittersweet. It was horrible. Oh, it was horrible. Oh, yeah. It's not nice.
No,
it's
not nice. Yeah.
So do you think that we'll all end up sort of like impressing sort of like the values of the men's game on the women's game as fans, but also the players themselves?
I think I hope not, but I can see it happening. It's the sort
it's
of thing
huge
that...
huge gulp in cash, isn't there? Yeah. In terms of money, it's a long way to go.
But I just think my knowledge of women's football is still very, 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 very low. But I'm a big fan of the England side, and yeah. You know, I guess I'm an Arsenal fan by default.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, did you watch the Arsenal Liverpool game? The Arsenal Liverpool game on.
No, but I understand Arsenal lost 3-1.
Arsenal did indeed lose 3-1.
The thing is, like, I didn't kick the chairs around afterwards. No. So it's
It's I'm going to try and see if I can get along to see Palace this year. They play in Bromley, which is. There's a bus that the 119 at the bottom of my road goes there. So I'm.
It's not a bad ground. We've been there before.
It's a nice ground, Bromley. Yeah. So I'm going to go along there. But it'll be interesting to see how partisan I do become. By watching a little bit more women's gaming, women's football, and see whether or not that kind of club. Sort of like mentality takes over.
If you're going to see the players wearing the colours. It's difficult not to.
Yeah.
But as well as that, I think that you know, this links into what we were saying before about the soap opera and media involvement and things like that, because the second that the media see that there is a market there to push this product, then there is no way that it will not be, you'll not be partisan because it'll be rammed down your throat. And I mean that in a nice way. It'll be more of it out there and that'll be good and it'll be more of an alternative. Yeah. However, you know, if there's money to be made, then, you know, it's going to be out there. It'll be in the press. And we'll have a transfer deadline day for the ladies. They'll play in the summer. Yeah. Oh, it'll all be a bit weird.
They do play in the summer.
Well, I mean, they play the WSL plays in the summer, the other leagues. I mean, the Palace are in, I think, the fourth tier, and they play winter time. So I think from third tier below, they play winter. And it's the top two tiers that play summertime. So WSL is ongoing at the moment. So. Indeed.
Mm. Right. Well, after that brief interlude, we're gonna go back to the transfer market and, from our own club's perspective. So, Jan, what's Sunderland been doing over the summer?
We bought a defender from Celtic, Matthews.
Right.
He came in, so that'll be good. We signed Coates from Liverpool permanently because he was on loan last season and he did very, very well.
Yeah, he was all right, wasn't he?
So we're shoring up at the back. Yeah. Which is good because I think it was clear that we were lacking somewhat defensively. And we are close to signing a player called Lenz, who is out in Ukraine, I think, at the moment.
Right. Is there any sort of like really stupid signings on the horizons? Nothing really ridiculous?
This is Sunderland Will, but
from Dick Avocar's previous careers.
We're probably going to be in for Pesky, I would imagine, at some point. But seriously, the biggest signing we made this summer was putting Lee Cattermole on a four or five year contract.
Once again, the sound of football leads and others follow.
But seriously speaking, I think that's to get him, because only a few seasons ago there was talk of him going off to Stoke, I think.
Right.
Good grief.
And that was under the previous manager.
How old is he? He's still young, isn't he?
Yeah, he's only kind of mid-20s, 27, 26, 27, if that, I don't think. So, as I said before, I genuinely think he's a great player. So I think he, so far, is our best signing of the summer.
Mm. Now, of course, you don't need to think too much about what Palace's best signing of the summer has been.
Yohan Gabaye.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a statement signing for you. Yeah. Look at us.
Woo. Yeah. And he's not fat. I thought when you'd sign him, I thought, he's going to roll in about 15 stones. He's going to be the new Thomas Brolin, isn't it?
Shatner Series 3. he's Yohan Gabaye. French international, ex-Newcastle, where he was very, very good. Ex-Lille, where he was very, very good indeed. But hasn't played very well at PSG, but he's coming back to Pardew, who got a great deal out of him when he was at Newcastle. We paid £10 million for him, and I am just not happy with that at all. I think that he is, I think there's too much of a risk, and there's so many years down the years where we've made big statement signings like this and they've backfired.
But take the money out of it. Take the money out of it.
Take the money out of it. He's a potentially a fantastic player. Certainly an extremely gifted player.
Yes.
I mean, really mind-bogglingly gifted player. Mm. And he may prove to be, just an absolute dream to watch.
Yeah.
And unlike, for example, when we signed Attilio Lombardo, the only player in the team that could get anywhere close to where Lombardo was thinking was Paul Warhurst. Uh-huh. All the other team were just didn't understand what this guy was doing. And yet he still was pretty spectacular for us. I'm not saying that Cabaye is necessarily there, although that's about right, but I always think about him. I think about Clive Allen. I think about some other big signings up front that we've made where, you know, and they just, there just seems to be too much hubris in those kind of signings. It's too a big a leap. Our previous record signing was Marcus Gayle. I just feel, you know, this is partly romance. It's not based just on that. And also because I know this club and they just do oafish, stupid, hubristic things at inappropriate times. They just can't help themselves.
Marco Gabbiadini.
That was the name I was
Marco Gabbiadini, whom we all know.
I think it was better coming from you. Certainly better coming from you.
And we all know what a wrong and Marco Gabbiadini is as well, don't we? Because we're from personal experience. Yeah. We know what a wrong is. So I just think about that, and I just think, you know, administration by Christmas. So, you know, it just worries me. But, you know, I mean, that reflects the positive, and, you know, he is a phenomenally talented player. And if he can get back into... I mean, not failing at PSG is not necessarily a bad thing, because it's a very, very competitive squad, and you know, and they've got it's a strange club, PSG. So, you know, I'm sure that if he can really turn it on there, then the fans will warm to him immediately. He'll probably love them, and then maybe it'll be the beginning of a great romance. But no, we shall see.
Well, speaking as
I prefer to err on the side of pessimism.
Well, I was just thinking that because you know, I'm from I follow a club that's, you know, not as successful as Graham's, I think it's fair to say. And if we'd brought in Cabaye, I would be kind of going, this is just too good to be true. What's
he signing?
Good, isn't he? Why is he signing for us?
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. Yeah. Why is he coming? But I mean, he is. There's a very good article on Unibet written by occasional host of The Sound of Football, Andrew Gibney, who explained about, you know, how he, you know Cabaye's situation and his relationship with Pardew. It's a very good read if you can track it down. We're so old now, so internet terms, it's, you know, beyond chip paper. But if you can find it, it's a very, very interesting and insightful piece.
Okay.
Well, there you go. And there's on that note, I think it's time to bring this podcast to a close, this special summary one, before we melt. Because we're very, very, very hot.
It's very, very hot
in your
office. Warm in the studio.
The studio was built for winter months. We're going to be back in the middle of August. That's when we're coming back. From me, Graham Sibley, from TFM, and from Melbourne, it's goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye.
You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Hello, and you join us for a summer special of Sound of Football, Top Trumps. If you were listening last time, you will know that Terry made a bit of a boob. Oh dear, Terry, what happened?
I forgot all about that.
Yes.
He chose poorly.
It's allowed the listener back in. The listener, with the slender four cards, but... It's quite a good one this week because you've got Klaas Jan Huntelaar.
Oh, Christ.
Yes, and we put him out there. We put him out there on social media, on the Twitter, and you came back in your drove with a unanimous choice of career goals. Ooh. And Jan, can you tell us how many career goals, as of the 30th of March 2012, Klaas Jan Huntelaar has?
He has 243.
Terry, who do you have?
I will attempt to inject some suspense into this. However, I do have Yaya Toure.
He's got an eye for goal.
He has got an eye for goal, but he hasn't got 243 eyes for goal. That matches certain. He does have 44 eyes for goal.
Yeah, just the 199 in between.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I
well done, listeners.
Well done, listeners.
You have chosen wise.
Join us again next time for some more Sound of Football Top Trumps.
Open the window quickly before we all die.